On page 15, here are some statements that over the years have bought properties for myself and other people. What's the least you'll take? That sounds very simple. There was a property that I bought in Riverside. There was an ad in the Riverside paper. No, it was in the LA Times. $170,000 house for $120,000. I thought, well, that's a good start. And so I went to see the property. First of all, I didn't really think it was going to be worth $170,000, and in fact it was. And when I got there, the people invited me in, and they sure seemed motivated. I mean, they really did. And it was very early in my career, and I didn't have a lot of money. And I didn't have a tremendous amount of skill, but I did know this line, what's the least you'll take? And so I probably said that a half a dozen times. I wish I could do, they would say, okay, we'll take this. I said, I wish I could do that, but I can't. What would be the least you take if we could get this done by? We went from about $120,000 to $70,500 over the course of about 2 hours after I ate there. Guess what they owed on the property? $75,000. They netted $500 and sold me the house. And it was one of those things that I was almost there for the experiment, too. It was working. That line was working for me, so I just kept on using it. It was worth about $5,000 or $10,000 a pop. So I just used it. I didn't realize their motivation until about 2 days later. We closed escrow very quickly. I owned the property, and I was there, and all of a sudden, there was a whole bunch of squad cars pull up. And they were not very happy, and they said, are you so-and-so? I said, no, fortunately. I just bought the guy's house, and so they were the FBI, and they were after him. So he had to leave. So I bought his house, and he took $500 and probably went to another state, I guess. But that line can be effective. May I ask you a question? You already know when I use that. I use that every time I have no idea what I'm going to say. It buys enough time, and for some reason, you're always given something good to say. It's never failed. And if it failed, I'd probably say it twice and stamp my foot. Come on. Do you consider yourself an honest person or a good friend? This one's a little tough sometimes, but I don't consider myself an honest person. I'm really rather a jerk. No, I won't say that. But just, this is what Zig Ziglar used in that one close. And what it does is set up another question that you've almost put them in a position where they have to be honest and answer that one honestly as well. Or a good friend. Somebody might say to you, you know what, if that's all I'm going to get for the house, heck with it, I'll just let it go back to the bank. Let me ask you a question. Do you consider yourself a good friend? Yes, I do. If your friend was in your exact situation, is that the advice that you would give them, to lose their house to the bank as opposed to get what they could get? Are you allowed to take care of this, or do I need to see someone else? That's my favorite line at the building department, where people are in little boxes of responsibility, and I need somebody to break out. And so this challenge has often worked. Are you allowed to take care of this? Allowed to take care. Doesn't that seem... That's what their job feels like. It's a little demeaning. They're not allowed to take care of it, but could they? Yeah, they're very capable of taking care of it. And they actually, I like them to rise to the challenge and do it. And so that's a good sentence. Now, if I'm meeting with a building department head, then it's the number 5. If you had this problem, what would you do? I have seen people at the building department cause unbelievable grief just because they didn't want to cooperate. There's really no one to tell them what to do if they don't want to cooperate. One experience I had, I was in line waiting for my turn, got my number, sitting humbly in the little chair. Person in front of me was trying to get an approval of a patio, but he was a jerk. And so he's now back for the third time just to get a slab patio approved. He's there with the paperwork. He finally has it done. He's kind of boisterous. He says, get the person that's going to stamp this and let me get the blankety blank out of here. I remember looking at the clock. It was 12:02. She said, I'm sorry, but the person that signs that is out to lunch. The guy explodes. He says, she's not out to lunch. She's sitting right there. He was so upset. Well, she's out to lunch. He bolts out of the door, right? Well, guess who's next? Me. I come up to the counter, and first thing I said is the nerve of some people. So they kind of got a kick out of that. And I said, I know that we're not going to be able to solve this today, but I wanted to know. I'm looking for a set of plans that's 3 years old. House wasn't finished. And I wanted to know if these were plans that you were trying to track down, what would you do? She said, oh, I would just go in the back. We have a dead plan shelf, and it's bound to be there. And I paused a little bit, and she said, I can go do that right now if you like. She went back there. She came back. She was all dirty. Now, this is the same lady that wouldn't get off of her fanny and do this on a piece of paper. She's back in the back sweating in this back room for 15 minutes, comes back with great happiness with this old dusty plan that she found. She's very capable of providing a service, but she was very unwilling to do it when the approach was wrong. So this is a good sentence for dealing with people that are in charge of a service that you need. By the way, is a transition phase to a close. By the way, do you have an escrow company you prefer, or can we use mine? If they answer that question, are we in escrow? Yeah, we didn't have to ask, can I buy your house at this price? We have transitioned away from that to deciding if we're going to use your escrow or mine. If they answer that, then I guess we're in escrow. In addition to this one thing, is there any reason standing in the way of an agreement? There's times that you meet with people and they seem to have all kinds of stuff that are issues. And sometimes it's better to ignore that or to put them all in one big pile and deal with it at one time. So that's what this does. Gets rid of all of the miscellaneous. So when you get to the answer to the one main thing, you should be done. Number 8, is that fair enough? When we make an offer and we go back and forth and we make some concessions and so forth, and then you put in at the end, is that fair enough? If it is fair enough, and it's maybe obvious we are trying to be very, very fair, that we can usually get a yes answer to that question. If people get upset, if it'll make you feel any better, I'll withdraw my offer. And then you be quiet. If you ask this or make this statement, and they say, yeah, you can take your offer, and you know, then that's probably not going to get you're not going to get that resolved. If, however, they say no, I'm just upset because of my circumstance, then you're probably going to buy that property. Number 10, how would it feel to have all this behind you and have the property sold? Let them for just a moment feel the relief that they will feel if they were on the other side of this transaction. Isn't that what car sellers do that are trying to sell you, let's say, a hot rod? Don't they try to put you in that experience so you can feel how cool you look and how admired you are? Well, in essence, when we're dealing with somebody under stress, we want them to feel the relief that would be, and then bring them back to reality that they're not there yet, but we can provide the path for that, okay? Page 16 at the top, if you were in the home buying business, could you make a profit paying that much for the house? Now, you can use that on a realtor that's upset at your offer. There's a good chance that he has no idea what our costs are. He's just upset that he's going to get embarrassed when he presents the offer because he doesn't understand what we do, but if he thinks that we can make a profit, then we get to say, well, I'll tell you what, in this particular transaction, why don't we play like you're the buyer, and let's see how it's going to work out for you. Wouldn't that be fair? I think that would be fair. Do you think someone who provides a service should make a profit? So if we're getting down to negotiation and people want a price that we can't do, and if you can't do it, by the way, is there any other investor that could do it at the price? If it's not profitable, would any of us take it on? No. Pardon me? You want to make sure they understand. You're not trying to be unreasonable, but when you provide a service, you do want to get paid for it. Number 13, given the choice, would you, and then you can fill in the blank, someone in foreclosure, given the choice, would you borrow more money or sell your home? That takes the temperature of that seller. If they said, no, I want to stay here, I'll borrow money at all costs, the odds of you buying that house today don't exist, because that seller is not ready. They have not made that decision yet. A few months ago, I talked to a seller that was still trying to borrow money, and her house was going to sale at 10 in the morning the next day. And I was talking to her basically at 6 or 8 at night, and it was a referral from somebody else. And I just told her, I said, you know what? You are not ready to sell your house yet because you haven't given up the idea that you're going to not own it at 10:01 tomorrow. And until you do that, it's pointless for me to drive down to San Diego, meet with you, and see if we can put it together, because you're not committed to the process. And we would need every minute of the process to make it happen. So there are times where it's too early. They have too many options left, and they think that that's what they're going to do. Number 14, if your best friend were in a similar circumstance, is that the advice you'd give them? We already talked about that one. We could remain stalemated. I go home with my money, and you go home with your property. But how is that in your best interest? There are times that people just try to be very unreasonable, and you have to bring them back to reality. If I read you correctly, and I think I have, you're the type of person who puts their family ahead of money. Would that be correct? Well, they're not going to answer that one, no, I'm really into all the money and the heck with my family, but I will use that on somebody that's contemplating leaving their wife and their kid while they go to Pennsylvania and go to work because of money. Yeah, I'll close that one, because I feel pretty strongly about that, that you would not want the responsibility of something bad happening where you couldn't react to it. That's not worth the money. When I've decided that you should sell the house, then I can get very good at closing. That's why I ask questions. I want to see if it's appropriate for me to bring out the arsenal of closes that I know how to use. That's that film clip that you saw. Those were very capable closers, but they were using it inappropriately. They didn't care if it was time to use it. But you do need the tools. I want the tools when someone disagrees. They think they shouldn't sell, but in fact, they should. That's when this business is fun, is when you're sitting across from somebody that's about to make a bad decision by not selling their house to you, and you're persuasive enough to get them to do it. That's when this business is fun. Number 17, to be honest, I must have misread your motivation. I thought we'd come to an agreement, but I can see that we're too far apart. Does that mean I've given up? No, that just means that we're done with phase one. Now I'm packing my stuff up. What happens when I start packing myself up? You're relaxed. You're ready for my next question. By the way, I'm just curious. We kind of talked about the other options. What are you going to do? That's almost invariably you have this statement. Oh, I have another investor coming over at 6 o'clock. So you couldn't have closed it yet because you have competition you didn't know about. Now you can deal with that. You don't have to leave. You can close that scenario. But it was important to get that out of the way. And sometimes you have to make them relax, giving the impression that you are about to go. Number 18. Sometimes we put so much emphasis on sale price, we forget the most important number, and that's what you get to spend. When you're negotiating with somebody, I find it's best to get off of retail price and get to net price, what it is they're going to walk away with in their pocket, because there's an emotional issue attached to a sale price. A net price, they start thinking about what they're going to do with that money, and I find that to be better. Number 19, I'd let you sit on the fence if I thought it were in your best interest, but it rarely is. And then go back to, we have agreed that, and then you go right back to trying to close. You'll use this statement perhaps when they've said, I'd like to talk this over with my dad or whatever, and it's not a reasonable request. Number 20, are you the type of person who likes to create win-win situations? See, most everyone will buy into that. Kind of goes along with number 21. Would it bother you if we did this deal and later you found out I lost a lot of money? See, if they're into win-win deals, then they can't set me up to lose a lot of money. And they almost have given me permission to show them what my cost is and what my margin needs to be. Does that make sense? And so that's a reasonable way to approach getting a chance to explain why we have to have a margin and what we do to earn that. On page 17, this is the closest thing I've ever seen written to our business. Have you ever been in front of a timeshare salesman? How many people have ever been experienced with that? Is that a one-call close? You bet. You betcha. That's the only chance they're going to have. And there's even a cancellation policy that's legal up to, what, 3 or 5 days? Okay, that's just like our foreclosure business. It's exactly the thing. You can talk somebody into selling a house in foreclosure, but they get 5 days to get out of it, and there's not a thing that you can do about it. You can't get them to pass on the right to do that. So this book is very close to our business. There's just a couple of things that I want to mention as I go down the page. I'll let you read most of these on your own. The second one down, objections are magnified by opposition and minimized by agreement. I like that. A lot of times we do the opposite. You know, your price is low. Is that a fact? It is a fact. It's okay to agree with that. Our price is lower than you expected, however. It's the however part that we get to go to. But fighting that objection is wrong. It is correct. And then deal with the why is much better. In the very middle, it says, it is better to sell for a little less than you expected than try to get more than you should. I like that. In the market that's coming up, and actually, I converted that one. That wasn't in the book because they're on the opposite side. This is a great statement for our business. It's better to sell for a little less than you expected than try to get more than you should. Because there's going to be people that try to get more than they should. You'll sit down with them the day that they're deciding whether to sell it to you for all cash or to list it with an agent. And the listing times are going to get extended. For a long time, they've probably been 90 days. Now they're going to get extended to 6 months because the market is going to take that long to sell. And so the person that tries to get too much, six months from now, could very well end up with an expired listing, but for a house that's worth a lot less than it was 6 months before. And so I like that sentence. Probably going to become part of a script. I can see it coming. The toughest sale is the best teacher. Those close ones we talked about, when you learn to close those, when you get the ones that you think, you know what, very few people would have been able to do that. You go to school and you learn a lot. Second to last one, selling is the art of persuasion to obtain agreement, not intimidation to obtain compliance. If you practice the intimidation, those are the people that end up getting the cancellations and the lawsuits. But if you practice the art of persuasion to obtain agreement, you don't. And the last one, selling contributes to profits. Everything else contributes to costs. And so in our business, learning to become a good buyer, in essence, that's our sale, is the only thing that produces profits. And if we don't learn to do that, we're going to have a problem in the business.